Blog Talk Radio.
Project Paranormal. I am your host, Jeremy Leonard, for the next 2 hours. Take a journey with us into the world of the paranormal. Now, this week, we have a very special guest, someone that is close to my heart. She was actually a client of mine in the past. Her name is Joy Stinson. She's written a book called Out of the Darkness about her battles with dark forces. Now, this story takes place in 2010 with a fun-filled trip to the Myrtles Plantation. Soon after coming home, she realized that she did not return alone. We'll be joining Joy here in about 6 or 7 minutes, so I have a little bit of time to fill. if you joined our show last week, you know, we had Brian Sons on, a Bigfoot enthusiast. It was a very good conversation. I learned a lot from him, and I can't wait to have him on again. Our co-host tonight, Chris Malonsaw, couldn't be with us, so I'm here tonight, a man in the ship by myself. So either we're going to sink alone or we'll rise to the occasion, one or the other. So with that being said, let me give you a little bit of background about what we're going to be talking about tonight. Like I said, Joy was a client of mine. She went to the Myrtles Plantation in 2010. She was sitting on the front porch, and she captured a orb. And soon after returning home, she come obsessed with this orb. Now, the bad thing about that is whenever you become obsessed with something like that, you're opening up a doorway. And unfortunately, you cannot control what comes through that doorway, which is the case of what I think is partially what happened. This is a very long, complicated story, as you'll hear as soon as we get joined by Joy. I arrived to the house. I was with a former group at the time. Me and my partner at the time arrived to the house, and the first thing that I can remember about Joy was, obviously, you could tell she had been up for days. She was kind of like out of touch with reality, but I don't mean that in a bad sense as if she was crazy. It was just you could tell that she was being terrorized by something. I talked to her briefly, and we walked through the house and stuff, and I had a very terrifying encounter while I was there, which I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. This haunting went on for about 2 years, if I'm correct. She had several groups come, you know, to try to give her answers and help her with this, and a lot of people failed. She had some religious groups come in, some other paranormal teams. It was just one of those things where she just constantly searched for answers, and the answers just wasn't coming. And if you could put yourself in that shoe and think of what it's like to be tortured by a dark entity and have no answers, nowhere to go, no one could help you, what that must have been like. And what makes this case bad is she had three daughters that were involved in this too. She has audio clips of her daughters being terrorized. One of them was let's see, hold on a minute. I'm trying to work the board here, guys. Stick with me for a minute. One of them was possessed, and she actually has the audio of that, I think, on her website. I think it's under author Joy Stinson. Now, I do have some videos on my Facebook page, my paranormal group, which is called Ghost Quest Para. Ghost Quest, one word, space para. I have three different videos that I post up there for y'all, so if y'all kind of want to get an insight of what we're talking about, y'all can log on and watch the videos, kind of give y'all a better idea of what's going on. Now, I'm gonna play y'all a couple of clips right now from our investigation there, and I'll play them later on as I talk to Joy. I'm going to let y'all listen to the first one right now. Now, I'm going to let y'all listen to that again in case y'all did not get what it said. Okay, in case you can't understand what it says, it says, "Mother effers, leave me." This took place in the master bedroom. At this time, Joy had actually moved out of the house. She gave me a call, and she said that she had moved out of the house, you know, if I wouldn't mind coming to do one last paranormal investigation and try to clarify some of the things that was going on there. So we did, and we captured this EVP. That night, it was me, my co-founder, Tammy, our cameraman, Ed Sharp, and we had Gail Fontenot with us that night, which is a psychic medium. Like I said, this took place in the bedroom, and in Bree Portier, which is my founder's daughter. She was also there that night. This took place in the bedroom, and I had the recorder sitting on the shelf in the closet because there were no furniture in the house. And if you watch the video, there is a video up on my page that has this in it to let you see what's going on. Okay, I have a call right here, which is Joy. Let's see if we can get her on the line. Hello, Joy, are you there? You there?
Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you today? I think we lost Joy. I'll try to get her to call back. But anyway, as I was saying, Joy, if you're there, please call back. I'm going to play a second EVP for y'all real quick from Joy's house. Let's let y'all hear. But anyway, look, I think we got Joy back.
Hello?
Joy, you
Hello.
There?
Hey, yeah, I'm there? Here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Glad to have you with us. I'm manning this screen by myself tonight. It's the first time I've ever operated it. It's not going too well. But anyway,
okay.
I welcome you to the show. I was just playing an audio clip from one of our investigations there. Well, let's start from the top, Joy. Would you mind telling us a little bit of background about yourself and kind of where this whole thing started from?
Well, I was just an average person, you know, living a normal life. I was a registered nurse. I worked at a local hospital. Had three young children, just a busy mom. And I went on a girls' night out to a haunted plantation just looking for fun and not really looking for the paranormal. But when I came home from this trip overnight, I had demonic images on my pictures, and none of the other ladies had this on theirs. So it kind of scared me yet intrigued me at the same time. And 2 days later, my 2-year-old daughter started saying she was seeing a mean man and a black dog in her bedroom. And we just kind of brushed her off, thinking she'd heard us talking about the photographs. And this went on for about a month. She started using vulgar language, taking off her clothes, acting in a vulgar manner, you know, things that a 2-year-old shouldn't know about. It just kind of freaked us out.
Well, tell us exactly, you say you captures paranormal images on the camera. Can you kind of clarify for us, like, exactly what it was that you captured on this photograph?
The first thing I noticed was a demonic face at the end of the porch. It had a kind of a human face, and it had a black spot over its eye, almost like it was half human, half animal. It had fangs. And it had an orb on its chin. It always looked like it had a goatee, but it was an orb on its chin. And this same face was captured in another picture on the back porch as well, as if it had followed me around there.
Now, you were with a group of other people, you said, and all the pictures that they captured, there was nothing. It was just that one.
Right, and they were taking pictures in the same direction at the same time that I was, and they did not have this on their pictures.
Well, okay, how long after visiting the plantation that you would say things started heating up around the home?
Well, I mean, 2 days later is when my child started seeing things. It didn't really start heating up, I would call it, until I saw it a month later. I started seeing things.
Right. Now, whenever the things started heating up, I mean, did it just go full force, or was it something that just, you know, over time just gained strength and momentum?
It just right off the bat got heated up because I think it fed off of our fear. You know, I was held down in the bed twice before I finally realized that there was something in our house, there was something wrong. And of course, our fear just made it stronger. It could do more and show itself more.
Yeah, dark entities like that, I mean, that is what gives them the energy that they need to grow strength is they feed off of fear and negativity. And, mm-hmm. you know, with you and your daughters being vulnerable to this thing, I mean, it just fed off y'all like hotcakes. And I think that's one of the things that really made it explode into the entity that it was.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I do know that before, for listeners that's just tuning in, I actually took part in this story. I visit Joy's house on several occasions and done a couple of paranormal investigations. And the very last one that we did is the one that I caught some very interesting EVPs. I'm going to play that again for y'all here shortly. But what I want to get to now is, now, before we showed up on the scene, you had a couple of other religious groups and stuff like that that come and failed, right? Could you give us an insight on what they tried to do and how they approached it? Because a lot of people have different ways that they approach these things. And, of course, naturally, they always think that their way is the way that works best. But, you know, it doesn't always work out that way.
Well, we had the house blessed with anointed olive oil. We had the house blessed with holy water by the Catholic priest. We actually had a Catholic priest do an exorcism of the house itself, and all that just made it worse. I think the thing that really made it swirl into motion and really get chaotic was we had a psychic medium come in, and when she left, we were dealing with more than two spirits. We were dealing with several spirits.
Now, what did she say exactly to y'all when she came?
The psychic medium? She said she was going
yeah.
to take these spirits into her body and go outside and expel them out into the atmosphere, which I thought was just totally ridiculous. And she went in and out of our house, you know, for several hours because she was just exhausted beyond walking. And, but you know, I just, whatever she did not work. It made it worse.
Right. I mean, y'all were at the house at the time this happened, or y'all was outside the house?
We were there inside the house.
Right. You know, I can only imagine what it was like for you and your daughters to deal with this, because who do you turn to when something like that happens? And you have all of these groups come in, and it seems like they just fail time and time again. I mean, it just has to be just a horrifying experience.
It is, because you fear people's reaction. We fear being judged, you know, and we were judged. People thought we were crazy. And people come in that prayed on our house would think, you know, if it didn't work, that we must be doing something wrong, because it should be fixed, you know, like, you know, just go away. But it didn't. Everything was making it worse, and it was all boiled down to what we were doing, you know, our fear. We couldn't get it under control. I mean, it's hard to get it under control when you got faces appearing in your wall and faces appearing behind you and, you know, your children. I mean, it's one thing to be scared of the boogeyman, but it's another thing to see the boogeyman.
Right. Now, I can tell you from my experience from the couple of occasions that I investigated the house, you know, you would take a picture in a wall and you would see a face in the wall. You know, and a lot of people
right.
will throw that off as matrixing, which matrixing is your mind trying to make sense of random patterns. But the funny thing about it was you can go 10 minutes later to that same wall and take a picture again standing in the same exact spot, and there will be a totally different face there. My personal belief is I believe that there were many spirits in the house, and I think they were all controlled by one. And I mean, they were just in the walls. I mean, they were everywhere.
It was crazy. And our walls were originally eggshell white, and you couldn't see them as well. But as this time grew on, I painted the walls brown and brighter and darker colors, and the faces just would show up with white mist on the walls, and it looked 3D, like it was stretching out at you. And it was crazy.
Well, tell us what was some of the more dramatic events that happened during this whole deal.
I guess the most dramatic thing that for me was when my child was possessed one night, and we had no clue what to do, and nobody would, you know, came knew what to do. You know, we just stood around helpless.
I remember you sending me that audio, and I actually wish I had it up here to play it, but I don't. But when you sent that audio to me, I mean, you could just hear your daughter just pacing in the living room. And I think she says, we're stronger than God now. I mean, to hear your daughter say something like that, I mean, it was terrifying for me to hear it. And I'm used to all this stuff, so I can only imagine, you know, what y'all were going through. And, I mean, you could hear your husband in the background. I mean, he's panicking because, you know, he's a man of the house, but he has no idea what to do. I mean, it's just one of those things where there is no blueprints on how to handle a situation like this.
You're absolutely right.
Now, we're going to play a clip here. This takes place in the master bedroom, okay? But you know what? Before I play this clip, I want to clarify something. Okay, I'm going to tell you what happened the first time I went to the house. I went to the house. I met you. You could obviously tell you had been up for days. Me and my partner went to go, before we do a paranormal investigation, we always went to go meet the clients to try to grasp the situation and see exactly what's going on. I mean, because a lot of times you'll get calls, people, you know, say all this horrible stuff's going on, and you can just kind of find out they just won't, you know, it's so cool to have paranormal investigators come to your house. I mean, you'd show up, they'll have 20 or 30 of their friends outside a campfire all drinking when you show up. But anyway, we showed up at the house. Like I said, you could obviously tell you were just in complete distress. I talked to you briefly, I remember, and I grabbed the K2 meter. K2 meter is a device that we use that picks up electromagnetic fields. Spirits are believed to be energy, and this device helps us locate it. Now, there's two sections of the house. There was the old house, and then there was a newer part that was built onto it, but directly in the middle of the house, there's a hallway that goes from one end to the other, and there's a little pathway where you could, it wraps around, the hallway wraps around on the back part of the house. Well, I grabbed the K2 meter, and I started walking down the hall, and the master bedroom was on the right, and the bathroom was on the left, and on the bathroom, it was one of the double vanity sinks, and there's a huge mirror that goes all the way across one wall. Well, I can remember walking past the master bedroom, and I got a real uncomfortable feeling, so I decided to take the left to go into the bathroom. Well, when I did, my K2 meter spiked all the way to red. I remember, and it held there for about what seemed to be 5 or 6 seconds, and then it just went back to nothing. Well, I happened to glance up, and standing in the doorway of the master bedroom was, you could call him a man if you want, but he was about 7 foot tall, because I remember his head come up to the top of the door frame right there. And he was a very skinny man, very tall. His head was bald, and his face was really distorted looking. And what made him not normal was the fact that his arms were twice, they were hanging down past his knees. Now, you got to remember, this guy was standing straight up, and his arms come past his knees, and his fingers were twice as long as a normal person's finger. And I was just in complete shock, because I had never seen anything like that, and I guess I looked at him for about 3 seconds. It was not one of those things where you see it out the corner of your eye. I mean, I made direct contact through the mirror looking at this thing, and he was looking at me. And I knew we were dealing with not just a normal spirit at that point. We were dealing with something that was totally demonic. So I made a couple of words. I remember I made my way to the kitchen where you and my partner was at the time, and I had told y'all what I had seen. And I remember y'all's jaw just literally hit the ground, because you had just got done telling him, you know, describing what this thing looked like. Now, I'm in the other part of the house. There's no way I can hear this. So that kind of, you know, validated, you know, what you were experiencing was worth taking a look at. Now, I can remember, too, that night we were getting ready to leave, and there was not a cloud in the sky. The skies were clear. You could see the stars. But there was one cloud directly over the house. And I can remember as we was loading up the truck that the wind was blowing 65 mile an hour plus, and I do mean it was blowing that speed, because it was blowing hard enough to knock the garbage cans off the back porch. I remember this, and we couldn't even hear ourselves talk. So we got in the car. I mean, we were both panicking at this time because we had never experienced anything like this before. We had only been investigating for about a year prior to this time, and, you know, we dealt with, I'm not going to call them petty cases, but, you know, just normal hauntings, you know, stuff that was simple. People hear a noise or they'll see a shadow or something like that. This was something brand new. And I remember as we were pulling out the driveway, the locks in the vehicle we were in, they were power locks, and they kept going up and down, you know, until we got about 2 or 3 miles down the road. And I remember my partner looking, pulling up the radar on his phone. And there was nothing, okay? The radar was clear except for one little speck, which was directly over your house. Now, is that coincidence? I don't know. But to me, that just seemed beyond coincidence, the way that happened. And, look, I remember telling my partner that night, I said, look, I don't want to go back to that house. I'm terrified of that house. I do not want to go back to that house. But deep down inside, I knew we had to, because there was children involved. Now, the bad thing was we never experienced anything like this before. We did not know how to help you. I mean, we did not know. So that's kind of where it started, to where I studied as much as I possibly could, you know, on demonology, paranormal and stuff. To me, at that point, it was real. It wasn't that it wasn't real up until that point, but at that point, seeing what I saw with my own eyes, that made it real for me. And as you know, I just felt that it was a passion that I had to help y'all, even though we had no idea how to do it. Now, we came back, what was it, about a week later?
Yeah.
And we'd begun a full-blown investigation that night, and nothing earth-shattering happened that night. Actually, it was a pretty quiet night. Now, I do remember two incidents. The first incident, we were in what we call the clown room, which was your youngest daughter's room, and we were getting a K2. The K2s were going crazy, and I remember my partner saying the word God. I don't know exactly how he put it, but I do remember vividly he said God, and everything stopped. The K2 meter stopped. Everything was quiet, and all of a sudden we heard this little voice say, "The mean man's outside now," which really freaked us out, because we did not realize with all the commotion going on that your daughter was actually in the bed sleeping. And she just looked up and said, "The mean man's outside now." That was the first thing that happened. And the second thing was we were in the master bedroom, the same place where I had seen this entity the first night that we were there. And I remember we was doing a spirit box session, and you or my partner asked, "What do you want?" And it said, "Kids." It said it three times. And I remember saying, you know, "You're a sick pervert." And it said, "F you," three times. I mean, "F you, F you, F you." And that right there just gave me chills. It still gives me chills to this day to think about it. After that, you know, we left, and it always boggled my mind of why did this thing show itself to me? I mean, was it because he knew I was vulnerable? Was he intimidated by me or what? And unfortunately, I think that's one of those questions that I'll never get answered.
It made me feel better that you actually saw what I saw, because up until that point, nobody else had seen it except me and my children, and everybody thought I was telling my children what to say. Well, I was not. They were seeing the same thing I was seeing.
Right. Okay, and then, you know, after that, I stayed in touch with you. You know, you would send me pictures and ask me questions, and I'd give you my opinion on it. Now, after you moved out of the house, you called for one last investigation, which was actually the night that Ghost Quest Para was actually formed that night. We went in with nothing but a digital recorder and a camera. That is all we had. And this is one of the EVPs that we captured this night in the master bedroom, which is the same place that I actually saw the entity. And I'm going to play that for you right now. We're going to play it one more time. case y'all couldn't hear it, it says, "Mother effers, leave me," in a very angry voice. Now, at the time when this happened, I was the only male. Well, there was two males in the room, me and the camera guy, and Tammy and Bree and Gail Fontenot, which was the psychic medium we had that night. They were in the room too. Now, we did not hear this with our own ears, okay? We was there, we were talking, and I remember right before this voice happened, Gail had said, "The hair on the back of my neck is standing up." And this voice comes over the recorder about 10 seconds later. Now, like I said, I do have the actual video of this on my Facebook page, Ghost Quest, one word, space, para, P-A-R-A. If y'all want to check it out, y'all can do that now. Also, if there's anybody out there that would like to call in and ask Joy a question, you could call us at 323-580-5703. Or you could just, we have a chat room. You could just ask a question if you don't want to be on the air live, and I'll relay the message for you. Now, the second EVP that I am going to play is, let's see what it is, and then I'll tell y'all what happens with this. Okay, I'll give y'all a little bit of insight on this. We are actually walking down the hall, leaving the master bedroom, going into what we call the clown room. Again, you could hear a man just screaming at us at the top of his lungs, and as you could tell, we're talking. We can't hear it with our own ears. I'm going to play it for y'all again, so now that y'all know what's going on.
All right,
What you think about that, Joy? You remember this?
I do, and that's what bothered me the most about this thing is its vulgar language. The F word was just a favorite word, and it had my children saying this word. It eventually got me to saying the word. It was sexual in nature with my children. I mean, it would say, "Wake up and F me" at night and pull the covers down off of them, and it was just crazy stuff like that.
Well, for those of y'all that may not understand what she's saying, what we think this thing was is an incubus. And what an incubus is, it is basically a male sexual predator. It's a spirit, but it takes advantage of sleeping women. Yes, they do exist. They are very real. And I've ran across more than once in my time in the paranormal field. Now, we have one more here. I'm not quite sure what it is, but let's play it and see. That was just the same one. Okay. So, Joy, now tell me some of the troubles and the triumphs that you went through during all this. Now, you live in a small town. Everybody knows everybody. And when all of this was going on, I'm sure people were talking, you know, people were looking at you like you were crazy. So describe to the listeners what you felt inside dealing with all of this, because you do come from a Christian background. So they're in, you know, living in the South in a small town, there's a lot of Christian community out there. So what was it like for you to not only have this spiritual battle going on, you know, but the spiritual battle within dealing with, you know, the people around your town?
Well, I guess, first of all, I have to say, if it had not been affecting my children, I would never have said a word, because that's how embarrassing it was. But because it was affecting them, I had to speak out, and I did not care what people thought or what, you know, how we looked. And the fact that I was not sleeping at night, my health started to decline worse, and people said, "Oh, it's just her health. It's because I have Parkinson's disease." I was diagnosed at a young age. And so people would think, well, it's just side effects of her medication. And I had family members say this too. Close family members believed I was crazy. And that was very bad, because that made me look worse. You know, they said, people thought, well, if her family thinks she's crazy, she must be crazy. And so it was very hard for me. And I was questioning God the entire time, off and on. I'm like, "God, why aren't you making this go away? And what am I doing wrong? And what do I need to do?" And I was just confused. I was back and forth and sleep deprivation, and mixed in with that, this is just a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine. I mean, I could remember you calling me on several occasions, you know, and you could tell in your voice that you just wanted to break down and cry with everything that was going on. I mean, you knew people were calling you crazy and everything. I mean, there was a time that they actually admitted you into a psycho ward. Am I correct?
Yeah, someone that I thought I could trust reported me to the Child Protection Services, and that was what I had to do to clear my name, get a clean bill of mental health, check into a psych facility. And I went through a battery of a test, you know, from psychological to physical to make sure there was no brain tumors or anything causing this or chemical imbalances. And, I mean, I walked away with a clean bill of mental health. I was relieved.
So did people after that start, you know, actually listening to what you were saying?
No, just a very few. And a lot of people that did believe didn't want to admit it because they didn't want to be, you know, labeled too. So people just were kind of hush-hush about it. And, of course, the further it got into it and the deeper it kept going on and on, I isolated myself from everybody because I didn't want anybody to know anything because it would just make us look crazier every time. And there
right.
were several occasions yeah. we thought it was actually gone. We have like 2 weeks of peace, and then all hell would break loose again. So, you know, it was just that's just a cycle it was going through.
Well, what do you think actually ended the haunting for you? Was it when y'all sold the house, or was it an event that took place before that? Now, I know that whenever we went to the house the last time, You had taken all the relics that you had gotten in Honduras. Now, we're not going to talk about the Honduras trip here tonight. If people want to know, y'all can get the book and read it for yourself. It's called Out of the Darkness. It puts a little bit more insight to what we're talking about here. But you had all the souvenirs and the clothes and everything that you actually had with you from the Honduras trip that y'all actually – am I correct?
Right. That's correct.
Now, I can remember we were sitting there and – it just kind of dawned upon me to ask where the ashes was, where y'all had done this, and y'all said it was over there. Now, the thing is, y'all actually burnt it, but y'all didn't remove the ashes off the property. And we
right.
went and we actually took some anointment oil and blessed the ground where y'all actually burnt it. Now, I can remember right after that, there was like a trickle noise in the woods right there, like something was moving around right after we done that. Now, that could have been a wild animal or not. I can't rule it. That was paranormal. It was just kind of one of those things that was kind of weird the way it happened. But after that, did the haunting stop before that or after that?
Well, the haunting, I guess you could say, got under control as we gained spiritual ground, my faith became stronger, and I finally submitted my entire self to God and asked forgiveness and forgave everybody, forgave myself, which was very difficult to do because I thought I brought this on my family. Once I got spiritually strong, I realized that God was greater than the devil and that God could defeat the devil, and we have the power through God to do that ourselves. And so when I'd say leave and get out, it was leave and get out. He'd listen to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything's quiet now. I mean, I'm sure you still feel and have that thought in the back of your mind that it could strike back up. But like you say, just keep your faith strong and hopefully that won't happen.
Right. Well, I think as Christians, if they live in right for the Lord and try to do what they're supposed to do, they're always going to be under attack by the devil. But that's just the way it works. But I have nothing as severe as what, you know, happen in our house. We certainly aren't seeing things and all that.
Now, y'all actually gave this entity a name. Y'all called it the Boss.
Right.
Now, I have seen pictures that you showed me where he actually, I mean, he was a very bold spirit, and I think that he was the demonic entity in the house, and he was also the one that controlled the other spirits in the house. And he was very bold. I mean, he was very bold. He was not afraid to put himself out there. I mean, you showed me pictures where, I mean, you could see him plain as day. He was bald-headed. He had a beard. And he's just one of those kind that you know, a lot of times in the field of paranormal is that we run across whenever we do an investigation is you have to understand these things are intelligent, okay? They are well aware of why we are there and what we're trying to do. And especially when you're dealing with a demonic entity, the number one goal of a demon is to make you believe they don't exist. That's what gives them their power.
Bye.
Now, this, on the other hand, he was very bold. He had no problem letting you know that he was there.
Right.
Now, okay, y'all sold the house. And if I remember correctly, didn't you say you had to actually put, when you sold the house, that the house was haunted?
Yeah, I had to reveal that. That's pretty.
That's crazy.
The new buyers didn't bother the new buyers at all.
Right, and I think a humane society actually bought the house. So there's actually no one that actually lives there. Is that correct?
No, I heard there's a house for cats. That's all I've heard.
Well, you haven't heard anything, like anything that they say they've seen anything or anything like that since then, or you just try to stay away from that?
No, I'm trying to say, I've had people go down there and take pictures and peek in the windows and stuff, and they'll call and tell me that they've seen stuff. But, you know, other than that, I haven't heard anything from the Humane Society. Like I say, they've got cats running around loose in the house.
Now, okay, so tell us about the book. Now, during all of this chaos that you and your family endured, you know, you actually had enough sanity to write down everything that happened, and you ended up writing a book about it. It's called Out of the Darkness. So tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, the book just tells my journey through this whole thing, how it started at the Myrtles, what I was feeling, how physically and emotionally and spiritually weak I was. And I lay it all out. I mean, from my faults to all the skeletons in my closet are out. I told everything because it all applied to what was happening. You know, it was all tied together. And
right.
I kept registering all the time. I just kept an outline together to keep the time frame straight.
Yeah, and I actually read the book. I mean, you sent me a copy before it was actually released, and I read it. And, I mean, you did. You literally put yourself out there, even in embarrassing ways that most people don't want anybody else to know. But, I mean, I guess you felt that you had to tell the story the way it was so people can understand what was happening when it was happening. So, I mean, You didn't leave out any details. I mean, you just let it go. And I think in the end you'll be rewarded for that. And I'm sure there are some people that, you know, got upset about when the book came out. But, I mean, I guess that's just how it is. And you just have to tell the truth.
When you tell the truth, somebody's going to be offended. But I had to say, you know, how it happened or it wouldn't have made sense.
One other thing I wanted to talk to you about now, this story is actually going to air on the Discovery Channel next Sunday night on the 27th, I believe. Is that right?
Right, 27th at 9 p.m. Central Time.
Right, it's going to be a brand new series. It's called When Ghosts Attack. I think the first episode will air this Sunday. And next Sunday will be Joy's story. So, you know, I'm kind of interested to see how close the TV show actually goes along with what really happened there. You know, Hollywood kind of probably this whole twist of things, but I do know that one of the things that you fought with the producers was that you wanted the story to be told the way it actually happened. You didn't want them to fake anything or anything like that. You wanted the story to be told directly the way it happened.
Right, and I wanted them to, you know, give God the glory for delivering us from this evil, so to speak. I didn't want them to leave God out of the situation because that's what my story is about, a battle of faith. You know, it wasn't just a horror story. It had a purpose behind it.
Right, and now I know now that, so what's happened in your life since the book's been released? I'm sure it's changed your life in a lot of ways. tell us what, you know, tell us what Joy Stinson, the person, is doing now.
Well, I'm just trying to lead a normal life, actually. But I am speaking at churches, giving my testimony, just telling them the story about what happened. Because, well, you know, a lot of people don't hear this because people don't talk about it. When it happens to them, it's like taboo. You know, they can't speak about it. It's unmentionable. It's a sin to talk about it. But, you know, if you have the strong faith in God, you can talk about demons and Satan and not be afraid because we have no reason to fear. And so I'm just out there spreading the words, kind of planting the seeds because people need to know. I mean, it's almost like a coach scouting another football team. You got to know what they're going to do so you can play defense and offense and win the game. And that's what this is all about.
Y'all, people that's listening, y'all could tell this is a pure country girl. I love the analogies. She could bring football into a paranormal conversation. You got to love it.
Yeah, I'm down all right country, that's for sure.
Me too. Look, I can't hide from it. All you got to do is listen to me talk. So what is the reactions when you talk in these in the churches? I mean, what are the people's reactions to it? I mean, are they just, like, dumbfounded? Or are they at all?
Some of them have their jaws in their lap. Some of them, you can tell, they clam up and have this look on their face like that ain't real. It didn't happen. And then you've got some that say, oh, my gosh, I've been held down to bed before at night, and I've never told anybody because I thought I was crazy. And, you know, it's people that come to me relieved that somebody can relate to them and they can talk to me and ask for help.
So do you get that a lot? People come to you, you know, with their story and ask for help?
Yeah, I get that a lot.
I can imagine. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, look, I'm a paranormal investigator, and I get picked on all the time. You know, they call me Ghostbuster and things like that. But what people don't understand is it amazes me how people live their everyday lives in a tunnel, so to speak. They have absolutely no idea what the world around them is about. They live their life through a tunnel. And, look, these things, these demonic figures, spirits, demons, dark entities, whatever you want to call them, they are very real. They are real. Yeah. They're everywhere. It is a spiritual war going on. And what gets me is people that say, oh, well, ghosts aren't real. Okay, my comeback to that is this. Do you believe in God? And they say yes. Well, doesn't that contradict what you just told me? Because apparently when you die, if you believe in God in heaven, your spirit, your inner being goes somewhere else. So why do you think there would be some left here on earth? Now, for one reason or another, why they don't pass on, whether they're afraid to be judged or what, or why they stay behind, who knows? You know, anybody's guess is as good as mine. I don't know. You know, but as a paranormal investigator, you see this a lot. I mean, it's everywhere. And I guess you open up and your senses come to when you do this kind of stuff, and you just realize that spirits are everywhere. It's part of the fabric of space and time. I mean, it's everywhere. And unfortunately, there are some bad ones. You know, my theory is if you're a bad person in life, when you die, that part that made you who you are, your soul continues on, and you're going to be a bad person in the afterlife. I mean, your soul is internal. So, you know, it's one of those things that I guess people really will never truly understand. I mean, look, we're just now getting to the point to where we have the instruments and stuff to do paranormal investigations to try to prove that life does exist after death. And we still have a long way to go.
Right. Well, you know, people want to believe in angels and all the good stuff and the warm, fuzzy feeling they get from all that, but they disregard all the verses in the Bible that do refer to unclean spirits and demons and Jesus casting out demons and his disciples casting out demons, and they just ignore all that. They don't think that it still happens today, and it does. God's the same as he was yesterday, so is the devil. I mean, it's all real, but we know who wins in the end if we've read the last chapter of the book. But people just have their blinders on. They're just not They don't want to accept reality.
Yeah. Well, so I do remember that you told me, now I wasn't there for this event, but you actually had an exorcism done on you through all of this, right?
Right, correct.
So take us through that situation. Was you aware of what was going on through the whole process? You know, just take us through the timeline to get people a sense of what it is like, you know, having a possession.
Well, I didn't realize that I had a spirit within me that was influencing me until it came forth. And it took several times to get the spirit out of me, and then actually it came back a couple of times, the same spirit, and I wasn't sure why, because I didn't understand anything about demonology. But I guess when it was inside me, I would say things that I would not normally say. I was doing things I would not normally do. Things that revolted me and turned me and disgusted me before, you know, I started drinking alcohol to sleep at night, and I just kept drinking and drinking every night, and I never did that, and I was watching pornography, and that just was a big no-no in my book. I could not stand pornography, and I was just doing crazy things like that, and I was talking vulgar. I was yelling at my children. I was yelling at my husband, and I could feel something actually looking through my eyes. My eyes would blur. And, you know, you could just feel something looking through your eyes. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's the way it felt. And when I would go to church, this thing would pull me to the side. I'd almost be laying over on my husband beside me in the pew because it was did not want to be in church.
So the thought of religion actually come to a point to where it angered you?
Right. And it was very hard to go to church.
Right, I can relate to that story. This happened to me not too long ago, actually. We done a house that had a demonic entity in it, kind of similar to yours. I don't think it was quite as bad as the situation as yours. But after coming home, I started off that I was having dreams. Now, this went on for about a week. I was having dreams of people being impaled, and it was the same dream every night. I mean, it was the exact same scene and everything. I would see people being impaled, and I'd hear all this horrible groaning and crying and stuff, and I would see a man wearing like a chainmail suit, and he had long black hair and a long black beard, and he had his arms crossed, and he would just turn and look at me, and I would wake up. At that moment, every night when I dream this, I'd wake up at that moment. Well, it got to where my personality kind of changed, and even my girlfriend Tammy, she noticed that my personality had changed, and it got to the point to where I remember going, I was at work, and I passed the church, and I just got so mad, so furious. Just by the sight of seeing that cross, I mean, it just made me so angry. And I knew that wasn't me. I mean, that's whenever I would think I was smart enough to say, oh, my God, you know, something's not right here. I mean, I don't think like this. So I can remember in my truck, I remember calling it out, telling it to identify itself. And I had a name popped up in my head. And I'm not going to repeat the name, but I wrote the name down, and I called my friend, which is the founder of Paranormal Society in New Orleans, and I asked him, I said, Chris, I want you to look at this name and tell me if there's a demon with this name. And he called me back about 5 minutes later. He's like, yeah, man, it's right here. You know, this demon right here is the name, the exact name, spelled the exact way that you said it. And what it says is this demon's trait or symbol is negativity and depression and anger and rage. So we contacted Bloody Mary, which is a voodoo queen in New Orleans, and she told me what to do and how to get rid of it, and I did. What I had to do was I had to get 4 candles and put it around in a circle around me, and I had an inner circle from the south pointing toward the north, and I had to read a Bible verse. And I had to continue to read it about 3 or 4 times, and I had to picture a bubble around me. And I can literally see, like, this thing that would, like, show itself. But, I mean, he wouldn't stay in one spot. It was just like he was just all around, and it was just blurry, like he was moving. Like watching something fast forward, you know. And after that, after I got done reading the verse, it stopped. And I felt better, and I've been better ever since. I was just fortunate enough to, you know, realize what was going on instead of letting this thing gain strength inside of me, because if I wouldn't have realized what was going on, it could have got very bad and very ugly real fast.
Right.
You know, and that's what I say. People just don't understand how real these things are. So we got to have my co-founder, Tammy Portier, is going to call in here in a minute. She was with us that night on the investigation, and we're going to just kind of get a little bit of insight of her story of what she experienced that night. So we're going to wait for her to call in. She should be calling in any minute now. So enjoy. So since the book's been out, I mean, I do know that it was like number two on the top seller list here for a while. So, I mean, I take it that it's still going strong because you can't find a book anywhere around here.
Yeah, it's selling very well, and it's moving up the bestseller list again. So hopefully after our show airs on the Discovery Channel, hopefully that will boost sales too. But word of mouth is starting to spread, you know.
Well, we got Tammy. She's calling in. Tammy, you there?
I am. Hey, Joy, how are you?
Hey, good, Tammy. How are you?
Doing good.
Good.
You sound so much better.
Oh, yeah, I'm better. Much better.
You know, the last time I saw you, you did look a lot better, but the first time I saw you, you know, you looked horrible, like you wasn't even in your body. It was bad.
I know. Yeah, you're right.
I am so relieved that everything is doing good for you, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's going very well.
Good.
So Tammy, I was telling Joy, you know, about the world that people don't really see. I mean, people kind of live their life in a tunnel, so to speak. Now, you are fairly new to the paranormal realm, but tell me, you know, what made you become a believer?
Well, if you remember right, whenever you had asked me the first time to go on an investigation with you, I thought it was the craziest thing ever. And I kept, you know, the whole time I was like, oh, I didn't see anything, didn't realize, you know, y'all kept saying, oh, did you see this, did you see that? I didn't quite understand what I was even supposed to be seeing. And that night we were picking up the equipment. And while we were picking up the equipment, something pulls my hair. And I thought it was just the group playing a trick on me and pulled my hair. Well, there is no one in there but me. So, of course, I freak out, and I'm ready to go get in the truck, but then they tell me that, you know, they could follow me to the truck. So that ended that. But that was one of the things, first thing that made me kind of believe in things. And then also, even when we went to Joy's house, the pressure, the different things that we all felt in there, the EVPs that we heard, everything from there. And then another location that we went to that really just changed everything for me was we went into this building, and Jeremy and Bree and Ed were both in the kitchen part, and I was standing in the doorway. And for some reason, I kind of turned around, and when I did, there was this red figure just standing there looking at me, completely red with like a cape and everything on. Scared me so bad. I said a lot of choice words, and we ran out of there. I left, and I told him at that point that I'd never do this again. But for some reason, I told him I wanted to go back the next week, and I had to face it. But that was one of the things that changed everything for me, was when I actually seen that.
So, Tammy, tell the listeners at home what it was like whenever we went to Joy's house. Now, you was only with me. You only actually did it one time. That was the very last time that we investigated the house, which is the same night that we caught the EVPs that I played earlier. What did you feel as you entered that house? Because that house had a very heavy feeling to it. It had the smell of sulfur. I mean, you could just tell the second you walked in the house that something wasn't quite right. What was
right.
It like for you?
Well, actually, I went twice with you, the last two times. And it was just especially in the bedroom. When you would walk into that bedroom, you would just, in the master bathroom, it was just a complete heaviness. You felt like you couldn't hardly breathe. If you remember right, I kept having to go outside, and I didn't know quite why because I kept feeling like I was sick. I kept getting a headache and get kind of nauseated, and I didn't quite understand why. But when I would go out of that room, I started feeling better. But every time I'd walk back in there, it would hit me again, and I would just really start getting like I was feeling sick.
Yeah, it was crazy. There were cold spots in the house. I mean, you go from one room to the other, and the temperature would drop 10 or 20 degrees. It was like you'd freeze to death.
Oh, right. Because there was, we had all the electricity off, and we would go in there, and, you know, you'd be warm, and then all of a sudden you were freezing.
Right.
I mean, different rooms that you'd go through, or you'd just be standing there, and it feels like it just like a, you know, a cold breeze just went by you, you know, it just got cold all of a sudden.
Joe, we got a message here from David. He wants to know if you were ever physically attacked.
Yes, I actually was. I was actually scratched one time. My husband and I were walking around doing what the one pastor told us to do, walk around. He was reading the Bible verses, and I was walking around behind him praying. And as we exited my two-year-old's room, I felt a burning sensation, a stinging sensation on my rear end. And I didn't think nothing of it, but we kept walking around praying, and it kept burning persistently. So I pulled my pants down, and I looked, and I said, "Jamie, look at this." My husband came and looked, and I had three scratch marks on one of my butt cheeks. And, I mean, I was just confused. How could that happen in, you know, through my jeans and not tear up my jeans, you know what I'm saying? Because it was like three claw marks. And actually, every time I would pray, I always felt like I had to get on my knees to pray. And when I would pray, every time it never failed, I would be pushed to the ground by a heavy weight. It was like a pressure. It would just force my chest to the ground, and my face would mash on the floor. And it would hold me either till it was ready to release me or someone would pray over me, and it would allow me to get up. But I've been held down inside, outside. One night I was held down inside the house, and my husband just happened to come home from work and find me laying in the doorway on the floor. And he tried to pick me up, and he's a big, strong guy. He said it was like trying to pull a dead weight off the ground. He couldn't even lift me up until he prayed. And when he prayed, he was able to pick me up. You know, so it was, yeah, I would call that being attacked.
Yeah, and I could tell you all this, too. If you go back to the story, whenever I seen the entity that night standing in the doorway. Now, as I said, the K2-meter spike. Now, I didn't realize this until I got home that night. I got home that night, and I was looking in the mirror, and I pulled my shirt off, and I noticed that my back was red. And so I turned, and there was two very distinct lines, and there was a third line that was kind of faded. But it was the three scratches, which is a sign of Trinity, which is demonic in itself. I actually took a picture of it, and I kept that. But I think that when the K2 meter was spiking, it was actually behind me, and that's whenever I got scratched. Now, I didn't realize when it happened because I was kind of in that paranormal investigator mode, and I was just so much was going on that I just didn't even feel it. Now, am I correct, Joy? Wasn't there a preacher that come there? He was going to free you of the demon, so to speak. It wasn't he held, Daryl?
No, I don't believe. No, I don't think so.
Okay, that may be another story somebody told me. I get confused sometimes.
But speaking of being attacked and having scratch marks, my two-year-old daughter and she was 9, no, she was actually 10 at the time, both had demonic symbols appear on their bodies. The youngest one had something on her chest, and the older one had one under her arm, the sign of the trident and the Satan's cross appeared under her arm. It was like a red whelp, and I took pictures of both. They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to mention how I got there, you know, or anything. They never talked about it.
Yeah, actually, that is on one of the videos that I have on my Facebook page right now. It's called Insight to Out of the Darkness. There is a series of pictures on there, and that is one of the pictures that is on there. Now, one of the other pictures that is on there is that I think is very important because it was also witnessed by someone else, is your youngest daughter was in the tub, and a face formed on the glass door, the sliding, which is the curtain to the shower, but it was actually a glass sliding door. Y'all seen a face form there, right?
Right. And she called me into the bathroom, and she said, "Mommy, come look what he's doing." And when I went to the doorway, I called my sister-in-law. I said, "Come look at this." And it was like an invisible finger was drawing the face and the bubbles on it, and he just peered into the perfect face of a man with a beard. And my little girl was just watching, you know, like she was watching somebody draw a picture. It was crazy.
Now, Tammy, when we went there the first night, I remember me and you sitting in the master bedroom, and you could hear footsteps in the attic up above where we were.
Right.
You know, a lot of people say, and I've known this from my own experience, demonic figures like to stay in cold, dark places. I don't know what it is about the attic, but I mean, several houses that we've done, they had a lot of activity and stuff going on in the house, I mean, in the attic. So, I mean, this place was no different. I mean, I remember us sitting there, and you could hear these footsteps everywhere. We didn't know whether it was mice or a coon got up there or something like that, but I can remember you just kind of looking at me with concern in your eyes, and I think we sat there for a couple of minutes, and then we actually left.
Right. Well, not only did we hear it in the attic, we'd heard it in the walls and the closet and, you know, all in different areas. Like if we sit with our back up against the wall, you could hear stuff like in the walls and then in the attic, the ceiling up above us in different areas. We felt that, you know, you could hear that noise everywhere.
Well, we used to, when it was at the height of its activity, we would hear knocking in the walls. It was almost like it was Morse code. You know, it was tap, 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 tap. And we heard that a lot.
I know whenever one of the kids' room, we heard a lot of stuff in there, too. I think it's the one that was connected to the living room.
Right.
We heard, you know, a lot of stuff in that room.
But that was the main room. That's the room that the activity actually started in. And was the worst in, was her room, the baby's room.
Now, your baby, at first this thing was kind of, I don't want to say friendly toward her, but, I mean, I guess that's what it was. I mean, it started off like during the day she would play around with it and, you know, be laughing and stuff with her imaginary friend, but at night she was just absolutely terrified.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I've got recordings of her. I wish you had them with you. Of her, you know, she's singing this pitiful song, and it just breaks my heart to hear her sing this. We're talking about the lights being out and the man being in the room. And actually, I've got audio with her. She and I were just having a plain conversation. She was at the dinner table one day. I was fixing her some lunch. And this thing said, "F me," in the background, just out of the blue, and she kept talking to me for a minute, and then she turned around and looked at this thing, and she said, "Are you going to F me?" And this two-year-old had no concept of what that meant. And, you know, just vulgar things like that. It was just crazy. But, you know, I got it all on audio.
Oh, but I know that song, that is the saddest. Oh, when I listened to that, it was just so heartbreaking whenever you had played it for me.
Right, yeah. It really breaks your heart because a two-year-old, it's amazing that a two-year-old to make up a song like that and it just be so pitiful because she was just terrified.
Yeah.
And the devil,
I mean, you can just hear it in her voice.
Yeah, it was desperation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just, I remember hearing that song too. And too, you go back to the audio that she has where your other daughter's actually being possessed by something. I mean, when you hear a young child just say, "We're stronger than God now," I mean, that's just terrifying.
Well, and she was saying, too, this is my body, this is my earth, and it was like it had her as his personal property, and she just, it was crazy. And the voice actually said that you're even God now was an external voice. You know, we left her in to give her a break because it had been such a physical, demanding thing on her. And I left my phone in there recording on the dresser, and it was silence in the room, and you could hear this thing call her name twice. It said it, you know, very clearly her name. And it said, you're stronger, or you're even God now, or something like that. And so there was something external to her and internal. I mean, it was just bizarre.
All right, let's see. We got another message here. Let me see if I can get to it.
And, Joy, how are the girls doing now that everything is kind of calmed down? Have they gotten back to their regular routine?
Yeah, because when we lived in our old house where all the activity was, they did not want to sleep in their rooms. They were still scared. They were sleeping in the living room. And we slept in the living room for almost 2 years. But now we're living in a rent house, building a new house, and they sleep alone in their own rooms by themselves. They're not scared. You know, it's a very
they're
normal.
They're actually acting like normal girls.
Oh, yeah.
And I bet they're getting all excited. I bet they can't wait for the house to be built.
Right, right. So they went through a lot, too.
We got a message from Lauren. She wants to know if you're afraid that being your kids experience this paranormal activity at such a young age that they will become sensitive toward it.
I'm sure they will, and they sort of are. I mean, it's not really, it's more of a discernment. They can tell when something's not right in a place. If they don't feel right or feel comfortable, they might not know exactly what it is they're feeling, but they can tell, and I can as well.
Yeah, she said she experienced paranormal at a young age, too, and it's something that stuck with her whole life. And it's just something that over the years she had to learn how to deal with it.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's a shame for, you know, especially your youngest daughter being so young when this happened. Hopefully, as she grows up, she won't really remember much of that, but you know, if she does, it's something that she's just going to have to learn to deal with.
Right. Well, you know, they went through so much and being teased at school. People saying, calling them crazy too, and saying their mom was crazy, and their own relatives saying the same thing. You know, they went through a lot. We didn't have normal birthday parties or anything. You know, for 2 years of their life, they were not living in a normal household, and there was nothing we could do about it.
Yeah. Let's see, what was I going to tell you? Hold on, I got another message here. Wow, they're actually pouring in here. Okay, you haven't experienced anything since you moved out?
No, we're doing fine. I think, you know, kids had a couple of nightmares and so forth, but they've been fine. Nothing's followed us.
Well, okay. Do you think that it actually come from the Myrtle's plantation? So I visit the Myrtle plantation on several occasions. It is a very creepy place, LOL.
Well, I had several things. You know, mine was a compounded issue, so to speak. I mean, going back to the child molestation, I didn't realize that in, you know, could introduce demonic spirits into your life. I was molested as a child. You know, they had the traumatic incident in Honduras that happened, the satanic ritual. So when I went to the Myrtles and I was in such a weakened physical and emotional spiritual state, I was a target. I was like a magnet for these spirits. And, yes, I do believe something came from the Myrtles, too, but I think I already had issues, you know, from the past.
Right, because remember us talking, you told me that whenever you did go to the Myrtles because you wanted a girls' weekend away, because the state of mind that you were in at that time, that you needed just a break and to get away.
Right. I felt like I was physically dying from the Parkinson's, and I had kind of given up on life. And, you know, it was like, okay, I'm going to go have fun for a change. And so
right.
It turned into a bigger nightmare.
So they want to know what happened in Honduras. Do you want to tell that?
Sure, I'll talk about it. I went there on a mission trip, And, you know, I was very naive, very, very naive country girl. And I just trusted people in general. And when I stepped off the bus, there was a translator that was taken with me. And he kept flirting with me and talking to me. And I told him, no, I'm engaged to be married. You know, I'm happy. No, thank you. And one night he asked me, he said, you want to go for a walk in the village? And we were not supposed to leave the camp. And he said, you want to go walk through the village and take some pictures inside? I'll translate for you. You can take pictures inside their home, see how they live. And I thought, oh, that is great. Let's go. We left the camp and didn't tell a soul. And we went to a couple places and actually did go in and talk and take pictures. And I thought that was fantastic. Got to this third mud house, and my red flag went up, but it was way too late. We had opened the door, and the room was completely black on the inside walls. It was a dirt floor. They had a big circle drawn in the floor, and there was six men waiting inside. And I found myself smack dab in the middle of a satanic ritual, and I didn't even know that that was reality either. I mean, I'd seen it on TV, but I had no idea people actually worshiped the devil. And during this satanic ritual, I was sodomized. I was raped by the translator. These men, I had blood thrown in my face. I'm not sure whose blood or where it came from or what kind of blood it was. But I think they introduced demons into me during this ritual. And actually, I walked away very numb spiritually. I mean, I was angry with God because I wondered how this could happen while I was on a mission trip trying to spread word, you know, his word. And I was raped in a satanic ritual.
Well, did you go to the authorities over there or anything? Which, I mean, I guess you're in a foreign country. What can you do?
I was in such shock that it happened because I kept thinking, this cannot be real. This cannot be happening. I didn't tell a soul because I was ashamed that I was stupid enough to go fall for his, you know, this trap. And I didn't went home and didn't say a word to anybody. I was just numb. And I like to say, I gradually turned away from God. I'm like, well, what kind of God is this to allow this to happen to somebody, you know, doing his work? And that's what compounded the issue. I think all these things combined made my situation unique.
So you think deep down inside that's where the boss come from?
Right.
See, I kind of think that, too. I mean, whenever I remember you first telling me the story about the Honduras trip, and by the way, the clothing and everything that they had burnt was from the Honduras trip. Took all the souvenirs she got from Honduras, and everything she was wearing from Honduras, period, everything she had from Honduras, they took it and they actually burnt it. Now, the problem with that is that even though they burnt it, they didn't remove the ashes from the property. Now, I'm not saying that's what kept the boss there because I don't know. I mean, this is one of these complex issues to where I don't think we'll ever really truly know where the boss come from. Or, I mean, could it be a generational haunting? Or, you know, was it led into your body in Honduras? Did it come from the myrtles? Or like you say, it's one of those things that's just all combined into one. But the truth of the matter is that he was there. It was very real, and it was, you know, a spiritual war that you had to face and a physical war that you had to face. Not only did you have to deal with it, your children had to deal with it.
Right.
And
you know, I nearly physically died. I mean, I had an irregular heartbeat. I was so frail. I looked like I came from a concentration camp. And you know, lack of sleep was not good either. I mean, I can look back at pictures of myself, and it doesn't even look like me. It looks like a shell of a person.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw you, you could tell you were a very, very, very frail. I mean, you could tell you had not slept in days.
Right. And, you know, it was scary to look in my eyes, especially when I was possessed. I can look back and see pictures of myself, and you can look in my eyes and tell that's not me. My eyes are wild looking.
Yes. And I know you've had, since then, you've had a little string of bad luck that, you know, that you go through. It was an accident recently, and you're still, you know, kind of
I'm
recover.
I'm still recovering from that,
Do you think that it's still the forces that's trying to stop you?
I feel like any time you're trying to do the Lord's work, the devil's going to try to stop you. And he attacks people in various ways, Christians, I mean, whether it's through your mind, physically, what have you. You know, sometimes I feel like, and I've had nightmares as well, but I always know who the victor is. You know, Jesus gives us victory over the devil, and so I'm not worried about anything. He can attack all day long. You know, God's got my back.
Yeah, see, for the listeners, I kind of like to tell you a little bit about how the book's laid out. I mean, the book is told from a religious standpoint. The book is just as much to do with her battle with Christianity as it has to do with the actual physical haunting that's going on. And it's one of those books that it's just going to grab your attention from the first page. It's one of the things that you're going to, as soon as you open the book, you're going to read it from top to bottom. I mean, you're not going to be able to sleep or nothing until you find out, you know, what happens and how it all plays out. And it's, you know, this haunting, I mean, y'all can't really get the grasp of what it was like by us sitting here talking about it. I mean, you talk about Amityville Horror, okay? We've all seen the movie Amityville Horror. Most recently, the movie The Conjuring. I mean, this is as real to that as it could possibly get. I remember I was talking to a friend of mine a while back, and we got on the subject about it. And basically, I told him, I said, you talk about Joy's case. It is a modern-day Amityville Horror. I mean, that is exactly what it is.
Right. And it was. I mean, we were living it. I mean, many times we would flee to relatives' homes or motel rooms, and it would follow us. I mean, we could not escape. My children would say it would follow them to school and talk to them and distract them in class, and it would appear on the bathroom stalls at school, the same faces from our house. And we would go to Walmart at night or something and come back, and the children would see it surrounding our car. They wouldn't even want to get out of the car to go inside. You know, it was terrible. It was a living nightmare.
Hey, you know, to try to paint a picture for the people of, you know, the house and what it looks like. I mean, when you turn off the main highway, you go down this long gravel road, and it's a beautiful house, and, you know, it's cow pastures. It's a beautiful place. I mean, it is literally a dream home for someone to have. It's a very beautiful place, you know, especially if you're one with nature, the land that surrounds it. I mean, it's just beautiful, and to be forced out of your home like that by something, you know, I can't even put into words what that's like. I mean, it's just like you're basically leaving your life, everything that you have, and have to start over by something that you cannot control.
Right, and I tell you what, when we bought the place, it was an old farmhouse, and we had to, you know, renovate it and everything, and I put my heart and soul into cleaning up the yard, landscaping, you know, making the house into a home. And, I mean, I really love that place. I thought I'd die at that place. But as this went on, I got to where I could care less if I had just nothing but the shirt on my back. It was just a piece of property. It was just a house. It meant nothing to me. And, you know, I realized that nothing was important but life and your family. Those were just things.
That's right. They're just physical things, and they could always be replaced.
Exactly. And I don't miss it one bit. And my children don't miss it. You know, we've got good memories there, but those were bad ones, and I just don't want to think about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very extraordinary story. And your husband, I mean, I've talked to him on several occasions, and I know that it was very hard for him to deal with because he did not, I mean, he never really experienced anything to the point in the magnitude that y'all did. I mean,
right.
You know, you would come to him and tell him what's going on. He would see how the kids were reacting. He knew what was going on, but at the same time, he did not know exactly what was going on because it wasn't happening to him. And I'm sure that was a big burden for him to carry as well.
Right, I'm sure it was. You know, he worked away from home. He would
come home on the weekends and would have loved to have a normal life, but he came home to chaos. And I would try not to tell him what was going on during the week because I know he got tired of hearing it. He wanted it over, and he kept trying to tell me, what to do, and I would do the opposite. And we got at odds with each other, and we got to where we got on each other's nerves. And, I mean, I'm surprised he stayed. I honestly am. He's a good fella.
Yeah, Jamie is a good fella. All right, so the episode will appear on the Discovery Channel not this Sunday, but next Sunday, the 27th. So are you curious to find out exactly how they portray it?
Yeah, I hope they didn't go too Hollywood on it, that's what I worry about, but hopefully it'll be given message. It just focuses mainly on my child's possession because it was so extraordinary. They didn't have time to tell the whole story.
Yeah. So, Tammy, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. I'm just so glad that everything's turned out really well. Because, like I said, the first time that I saw Joy, it was she didn't even look like she was in her body at all. Her eyes were just completely blank and everything. And now to hear everything, and like I said the last time that we saw her, she just looked like she was full of life. And I'm just so glad that all that is, she's just doing so much better, and plus the kids are too.
Yeah, it's a happy ending.
Yes.
And, I guess that's kind of the fairy tale, and, to know that there is hope. I mean, it's very important for people to understand that when you're faced in your darkest hour and you think that there's nowhere else to turn to, there are people out there that will always give a lending hand. And in one way or another, through the faith of God and Christianity, you'll make it through. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. If you feel like your back's against the wall and you have nowhere to go, and if there's anybody out there that's listening tonight that is going through a similar experience that as Joy did, Joy, what would you tell these people?
Well, I could send them to the right people to help, and I would I could guide them through the steps they need to take. And I could certainly tell them what not to do, because I did a lot of things I should not have done that made it worse. And we've already helped some people, gain deliverance, and it's just a good feeling to be able to help somebody that's going through something that I was, and hopefully they don't have to struggle for years like I did with this, because 2 years is a long time to lose out of your life.
Yes, it is. And, if you would have known that, went back and been able to do it all over again and knew the steps to take now, it probably would have decided a long time ago.
Right.
And I can remember you telling me before the book come out, and you told me, you said, Jeremy, I'm doing this because if there's one person out there, just one person that reads my book, that I could change their life and give them hope, then everything that I've went through, everything I've experienced, the torment, the relationships that's been shattered, everything that you dealt with will be worth it.
Right, and I meant that truly. And, as bad as what I went through was, I have to say I'm thankful that I went through it, because I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I would, I probably wouldn't be alive, actually. But it would have overtaken me. But it just, I'm a better person for it. And I see people differently. I love people now. I don't look at their faults and what they do, But I was so judgmental before this, and now I just love everybody. I just want to embrace the world.
Yeah, that's funny. You talk about being judgmental. People are judgmental and they worry about other people's petty differences. Now, when you're faced with a situation like that, it goes to show you that all of that stuff is nothing. It's useless. When you are faced with something like this, it forever changes your life and the way you look at your life, because, well, let's face it, you don't ever know when it's your time, so you should live your life to the fullest in every moment as if it's your last. There's no room for hate. There's no room for anger. There's only room for love.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joy, could you tell people where they could find your book?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNobles.com. It's available as an e-book as well. And I think it's on Books A Million as well online. But mostly people buy from Amazon. That's where my top sales are coming from.
Well, that's good, Joy. I really enjoyed having you on the show tonight. I know you're a busy lady, so we won't keep you any longer. But it has been a pleasure and an honor to be able to speak with you again. And if you ever need me, you know where to find me.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. And talk to you later.
All right.
Good talking to you, Joy. Bye-bye.
Bye, Tammy. Bye-bye.
So, Tammy. Tammy, you there? So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back.
Your car before you get stuck. Go and grab you a beer and get on up in the truck. It's going down tonight. It's all on me. It's BYOB and I got all we need. Yeah, boy, I'm about to show me a city slicker.
Okay, and we're back. So, Tammy, you there?
I am.
So, what you think about that? I mean, you know, hearing everything that went on and experiencing it for yourself, I mean, what comes to mind with that?
Well, like I said, whenever I first went over there, I didn't know what to really expect because I wasn't familiar with the paranormal and different things of that nature. But like I said before, I just remember seeing her face and seeing the emptiness in her eyes. And right now I am just so, you know, blessed to hear that the kids are doing so much better and Joy is doing better and she's happy now. And, I mean, that family had just went through it for 2 years, and it was horrible.
Yes, it is, you know, and these cases that deal with demonic hauntings and like that, they're actually really rare. I mean, you don't run across this too often, but somehow or another it seems to find us. you know, we got this case that we're going to do this weekend that is somewhat similar to Joy's story, even though the hauntings
right.
have really just picked up. A couple moved into the house. They've been in the house for a year now. Nothing really happened until they started to remodel the house. Then all hell broke loose. The cabinet doors, they would leave and they would come back and all their cabinet doors would be open. Doors would open and close by themselves with them sitting there watching it with their own two eyes. They called in Paranormal Society of New Orleans, actually went there last weekend, and done an investigation. Well, Chris, which is the founder, cleansed the house and everything. Well, the next day I think she called him panicking that they had left and all the doors and stuff were open again. Well, come to find out that the husband was upstairs remodeling the bedroom and he pulled the old
Well, remember the when she went in and all the
cabinets were open. Then she heard something upstairs. She thought it was the kids upstairs. So she went upstairs, and there was nobody up there, but it kept saying, look under, look under. And when she looked under, they had the carpet up, and she looked under, and when she did, she found that pentagram.
Yeah, there was actually two different pentagrams there. I mean, but you know the thing, Tammy, that gets me about pentagrams is it looks like it's so childish, you know. It looks like a kid literally drew this, but obviously if it was a kid, I mean, you're probably looking at a teenager or something like that that had to know what satanic symbols are. Because, I mean, it's truly, you could tell it's an altar. I mean, it's a portal. Somebody was literally trying to conjure something up.
But
so
if
we
you
get
remember
the,
right, the pentagram, that was looked childish, but there was some writing beside it. But that writing was very, very neat and everything, if you remember that.
Yeah, it says his altar, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. But that writing was just, I mean, it was very neat, adult looking and everything. It looked completely different than the other drawings and all that was on the in different areas.
Yeah, now, after we've seen this, we got the K2 meter out and we've done a little session. And, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, energy in that room because that K2 meter was just going unbelievably crazy. So we get the pleasure of going back tomorrow night and see if we could help this family out, you know. And to me, investigations like this, you know, this it puts a lot of pressure. I mean, because I feel that this family is counting on me. I have to help these people. Who else do they have? I mean, they're at the end of their rope. Who else do they have that can help them? So, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on us as paranormal investigators. But at the same time, that is what it's all about. That is what being a paranormal investigator is about. Yeah, sure, going and doing, like, haunted hotels or you know, something like that is what I call a worry-free investigation. That's where you just go in and try to get some evidence and have fun. There's not all that worries and the stress on your shoulders that you have when you're dealing with something like this. I mean, this is a whole different animal because these people are in the corner now to where if we can't help them, they're going to have to move out and lose everything that they had. They're just going to walk away from it. And they don't want that, and I don't want that for them. So it puts a lot of stress on us. You know, people see these shows on TV, and it glorifies paranormal investigations. But people, y'all have to understand, that is TV. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not real by no means because it is, but there is two different sides to it. That's what you call worry-free paranormal investigations. You just go in there at a location, do a lockdown, try to gather as much evidence as you can, but then there's these paranormal groups like us that do private residence and stuff, and look, that puts a lot of stress out there, you know. I'm going to tell you like this, you know, these shows, they're great paranormal investigators, but some of the greatest paranormal investigators out there are people you've never heard of.
Yeah, that's very true. And also, the one that we're going to tomorrow night also involves kids also. And the kids have seen it, have talked to it, but will not really discuss it with anybody else. And so that makes it tough, too, whenever you have these small kids that do not want to really go into the house anymore because they're scared to go in. And since they're remodeling this house, they're living in a camper in the back, and they would rather stay in the camper than they had to go into this nice home.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a nice home. It is, you know, the American dream. I mean, it's a two-story house, a very beautiful house. Very nice neighborhood. I mean, that is what, you know, families dream of, is owning a nice home like this. And these people are faced with a situation to where if this haunting doesn't reside, they're going to have to walk away from that. And, you know, it's just, look, I love what I do, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But being a paranormal investigator can be very stressful. It's not just glamour and fame or whatever. In my opinion, look, if you're a paranormal investigator and you're worrying about getting a TV show, that's like winning the lottery. You know, you're in it for the wrong reasons. You have to be in it because, for one, to help people, and two, because you have the knowledge to know how. You have to study. You have to learn everything and anything you can. There is never what you would call to the point where you become an expert. And if anyone tells you they're an expert, they're lying.
Yeah, that's true, because I remember whenever I decided to even do this with you, and I went out and started buying all the books, and I started reading all of them, and then I'd ask you questions, and I'm like, oh, did you ever do this? Did you something about that? And actually, a few things that neither one of us was familiar with, and like I said, we've been learning as we go. And every case that we've actually been on has been a learning experience, because you always, most of the time, you experience something new. It's not something that you are used to, you know, every case is different. And whenever these people finally break down or are experienced enough that they're at their wit's end to call someone, you know, in our field. Because when somebody decides to finally pick up the phone and call a paranormal investigator, they are so scared at that point. Because, I mean, they're sure it takes a lot for them to want to do that, because they don't want anybody to think they're crazy. And most of the time, that's the first thing that comes out of their mouth. You know, look, can you just come and look in my house? Because, you know, I think I'm crazy. I mean, I keep seeing things, and I don't know what's going on. Can you tell me, you know, what it is, or am I just, you know, imagining things?
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, a lot of times when people call us and you know, you answer the phone, they're kind of hesitant. And they say, are you the paranormal people? And we say, yeah. And they're like, well, I got a question to ask you. And, yeah, I mean, you could tell that they're worried about you thinking they're crazy. And a lot of people, too, and I think this is very important for anyone out there that's listening that may be experiencing something paranormal, but kind of afraid to contact anybody because they're afraid that, well, you know, if I get a paranormal group out there, nothing will happen. Well, as a paranormal investigator, you're well aware of that, and it does happen. But let me tell you something. True paranormal investigators have their techniques that they do to be able to communicate with something. You know, it's like I said before. These spirits are disembodied people. They are conscious. They're intelligent. They know why you're there. And if they don't want to communicate with you 9 times out of 10, they're not. But there is that hope that you can reason with them. It either convince them to move on or give you some kind of sign that they're there.
And also, people that have small kids and they tell them things. Don't think that just kids are just crazy, because 90% of the time they probably are experiencing something, you know, and they shouldn't have to deal with this. I mean, you need to be kind of open-minded with this and try to get some help for them, because kids can sense this, and kids can understand don't understand what's real and what's not, and they can see spirits and things more than what we can. And that's how they're able to talk to different things and see this.
Yeah, well, you see, I have a theory. Now, this is my own theory, but I believe that a lot of kids have imaginary friends. I mean, that's common. I had one whenever I was a kid. You know, it's a common thing because kids only see what's there. They don't know what's real and what's not. They only see what's there. And when, as you're growing up, you're taught that that's not real, ghosts are not real. So I think as you grow up and your brain starts developing more and more, that your brain doesn't process it anymore because you are taught to believe that that is not real. Now, that is why when you're an adult, you may sense things, you can feel, you know, that something's not right. You can feel that somebody standing behind you or breathing down your neck or something, but you can't see it. Same way as if you're sitting in a room and you see something out of the corner of your eye, you know, it's because your brain does not process it. And in kids, their brain processes it because they don't know what's real or not. They only see what's there.
Yeah, that's true. But also, I remember, like, on one of our this was sometimes last year, we had went on a camping trip. And I didn't want to, which, you know, I'd went on a couple of investigations with you and all this, and I was even hesitant of telling you that I was experiencing things at the house to myself. And then finally, on this camping trip, I finally told you that I thought we needed to maybe cleanse the house or something, and that I was seeing things. And then that's whenever you told me, oh, well, by the way, now that you're bringing it up, I'll let you know that I saw someone in your house and had talked to them. Do you remember that?
Yeah, sure do.
And at that point, but I was reading over the books at that point, and I was going through all the books on how to get things out of your house on your own, you know, as just far as buying house plants and all that, and because I didn't want to tell you everything that was going on at that point. And I remember leaving the camping trip, and we had went to Lowe's, and I had bought like $100 worth of plants and wind chimes and all kinds of stuff, and was putting them all through the house.
I'm crazy. I remember thinking, yeah, this one was crazy, buying $100 of plants.
Yes, because I was sending them out of the house because I remember reading that in the book, and I didn't really want to say, you know, too much about what I was doing. And then finally I broke down and told you, I said, well, I'm buying all these plants because they say they're supposed to, you know, get rid of any evil things, positive things in your house and all. And the wind chimes, you put them in the windows and you're supposed to, you know, make them go into the glass. It keeps the positive, you know, only in your house. But, and then you had told me then that you had spoke to someone that I did have a spirit in the house. And come to find out, you had told me that it was my dad, and we had talked about it. But, I mean, just because you see things or feel things in your house, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a negative. It can be somebody. And my dad had never been to my house here. You know, he had passed away when I was younger, so he had never even been to this home. So it can always, it doesn't have to be a negative thing if you're experiencing something in your house. It may be a loved one that, you know, is just wanting to see you and see what's going on or different things like that. It doesn't have to be, you know, completely something negative or demonic or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, that's right. I mean, there are good spirits out there, and a lot of times people contact us and say, look, I think I have something in my house. And then we do a paranormal investigation, we find out that it's not, you know, anything dark, it's positive. I won't do a cleansing in a home to get rid of any kind of positive energy like that. I mean, I could convince them, you know, maybe to move on, but as far as doing a cleansing in a home, no, I'm not going to remove any positive energy. But with Joy's case, it was definitely not positive energy that she dealt with.
Oh, no.
For anybody out there, look, I tell you this, if you want to know the horrors and the danger that spirits can cause, they are very real. They can hurt you. You know, you have to be aware and you have to take control of your life whenever you encounter something like this. I'm telling y'all, get her book, read it. And I promise you, by the end of that book, you will feel so much emotion, so much anger, so much sorrow living through what she went through. It is definitely the buy.
Yes, it is. I mean, her book is just that whenever I started reading it, that was one of those books that I just could not put down. And I stayed up half the night and, you know, just didn't want to put it down and knowing I had to get up the next morning and go to work. And but the book is just, it's great. I could, like I said, it's one of the best books I've read in a long time.
Yes, most definitely. Well, let's talk about what we're going to be talking about on the show next week. Next week, we will be broadcasting live from Horror Fest 2013 in Hammond, Louisiana. We will have a few guests on. We will have the band Murder Case. We will have Paul Nana, actually, which is the lead singer of a band called Murder Case. They just signed a major label. They're getting out there. And if you're a metalhead, look, you need to check out these guys. They're a great group of guys, awesome music. I get in the truck. I always got a Murder Case CD on. Tammy gets in the truck. He was blasting wide open, and there she goes hollering at me, "Turn that stuff down." But I tell you what, I love it. There's not a song on there that I don't like. And we will talk to Paul Nata and the crew next week from Horror Fest. And, look, they'll keep you entertained, trust me.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely going to keep it entertaining. I'm sure of that. There's not a doubt in my mind.
Yes, and we'll probably run across a couple of other celebrities along the line while we're there. If I can find Puppet, I'm going to interview him if I can get him on the radio. Puppet is a little guy, a little munchkin. He's appeared on several movies. He was on one of the Jackass movies. He's in The New Wizard of Oz. He's also a midget wrestler. Yes, he is. He is a star midget wrestler. But he's a great guy. I've met him once or twice. Very, very cool guy to hang out with. So if we can see Puppet, we're going to try to get him on the radio and see what he's got going on. But so make sure y'all tune in next week and join us. We will be broadcasting live from Horror Fest 2013. With that, I say good night. Tammy, anything you'd like to say?
Oh, the only thing I want to say is, like I said, if anybody has anything that's going on that's paranormal, they feel a little leery about, go ahead and contact us at Good Cliff Para on Facebook. And just because we put a lot of stuff on the Internet and everything, we do things that's confidential. If you do not want anybody to know, it will be strictly confidential. Nobody will even know that we've even come to your house.
That's very true. And look, and if you live in another state somewhere and you're listening from some other place, look, there's paranormal groups everywhere out there. I am pretty sure that there is a paranormal group somewhere near you. And you can find them on the web. There is a website that you can go to. It's called Paranormal Groups USA, I think it is. Is that what it is, Tammy?
Yes, I think so.
And you can go on there, you click what state you live in, and it will give you a list of all the paranormal groups out there in your area. Like I say, look, it's better to be safe than sorry. If you think you're experiencing something out there but you're not quite sure, give these guys a call. They'll come out there. And, look, there's no charge for this. And I'm going to tell you this, if there's anybody out there that contacts a paranormal group and they charge you to come and do an investigation, cut all ties with them, because that is, they're only in it for the money. That is not what it's about. It is about helping people. I would say 95% of the groups out there do not charge. So, look, it's better to be safe than sorry. So, y'all, hope y'all tune in next week. We will be broadcasting live from Horror Fest 2013. Good night, people.